This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast. Hi, I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess, and we're the Rambling Raven Puffs.
Because Potterheads are far too nuanced to be shoved into just one Hogwarts house.
Each week, we will cover two chapters in the saga of our favorite boy wizard.
All the while exploring literary themes, tarot card exercises, and even fanfic speculations.
To connect with us, your fabulous host, and other listeners, join the Discord server for Sophomere Studios.
And to support the podcast and gain access to exclusive bonus features, consider joining our Patreon page at patreon.com/sophiamarestudios, all lowercase.
Thank you for tuning in, grab your butterbeer, and enjoy the show.
Welcome again to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we are covering Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, chapters 33 and 34, Fight and Flight, and the Department of Mysteries. Ooh, and though there's no break in the episodes being uploaded at this point, but at the time of this recording, it's been 2 weeks since we've seen each other because I had a business trip in Oxford, Mississippi, and you had a business trip as well in Washington, D.C.
Yes, we have been traveling the United States.
Yes, and what was super exciting on my end is I got to visit the home, the 19th century abode of William Faulkner, who I have not read any of his works. Bad Amy.
Well, I haven't either. And I didn't get to see, I saw nobody's anything. I looked at Potomac or whatever. That's it.
Last time I was in DC for a business trip was February 2020. And I didn't go to literally any sites. I sat in my room by choice reading The Angel's Game by Carlos Ruiz Zafón, sequel to Shadow of the Wind. And then in the evening, I took the metro to a few used bookshops.
That would have been much more fun than what I did, which was talk about work constantly. So,
but back then, I was thinking of a used bookstore in DC, still a shitty paperback is $6.50. compared to what you and I are used to in Missouri and Indiana.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
I don't want to think about it with inflation now.
No, definitely not. And I honestly would have rather gone to Mississippi because I'm a Southern girl at heart. So I miss the South a bit.
Yeah, I could have had blue Hawaiis with me and apple teenies.
I probably would have drank some bourbon. So there would be good times.
Good times, but we are back settling into our routines of our monotonous lives.
Yes.
And that includes podcasting about Harry Potter. So your first thoughts on these two chapters?
Well, I think I've been so used to the chapters being extensive. Both of these chapters were probably, the duration of our one chapter previously. So that was interesting. But not for lack of things happening. I mean, things happened. And we finally got to the Department of Mysteries. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think this is a typical pattern in Harry, the author's writing style. Is he, the way he, breaks down these, adventures he has, towards the end of the books, there'll be a few, again, the books are, in the middle are so dense. And then when we get towards the climax, he has to break it down in a few smaller increments, and then we go back to longer at the very end for the last few chapters.
Okay. I thought there might be a little bit of a pattern. So, yeah, but go ahead. Sorry.
No, yeah. I'm just thinking there's a few short chapters in Prisoner of Azkaban setting things up. There's a few short chapters. In fact, the chapter of the cult of Voldemort rising from the cauldron. That's a very short chapter where it's just putting all the gross ingredients in the cauldron and he comes out and that's
yes.
it.
That is their gothic horror chapter from then. Well, I mean, and this just kind of kicks right off with them, marching through the Forbidden Forest.
Yeah. So Harry has no idea what Hermione intends. And he's not in a position to even, like, whisper to her because, like, Umbridge is is right on their ass, like, that he can hear her ragged breath. And at first, Umbridge is like, is it in Hagrid's hut? And Hermione's like, of course not, said Hermione scathingly. Hagrid might have set it off accidentally. Yes, he would have done, of course, the great half-breed oaf.
Not nice.
And it's... I guess it's just sad, like, that how easily Hermione can play into her prejudices to add further fuel to this story. Okay, I have my book open. Wait, where's my little journal? I need my journal, too. Because I had a few notes. Because it's kind of interesting with Hermione when it comes to, like, having to lie like this. She is very much, like, hit or miss.
Yeah.
When it comes to, because she is the planner, and again, I understand that because I'm the planner too, you know, is not always the best under pressure. And that's usually most of the time portrayed as Harry's strength and sometimes even Ron's strength, not Hermione's strength. But there are these few times where, like, she just, you know, saw the situation and ran with something, and it's working very well.
Yeah. Her, the end result, which we learn of her plan, is quite, I don't know. I have a lot of...
We'll get there. So, and it's like, we're going into the forest. Can we have your wand then if we're going first? No, I don't think so, Mr. Potter. The ministry places a rather higher value on my life than yours, I'm afraid.
I kind of was like, you really think so, Umbridge? I mean, when it comes down to it, I don't know about that.
Yeah. So Harry is a little nervous is because they're not going the place where Grop was. And in fact, Hermione doesn't know this because she was already petrified. She wasn't with them in the second year escapade into the forest. But Harry knows that they're getting close. They're getting not too far away from where the giant spiders are.
Yeah. So I would be freaked out too. And I had to remember that Ron's not with them. So he wasn't going to raise up any flag, but yeah.
And Hermione is making a lot of ruckus, shouting, snapping twigs. And it's like, she wants them to be heard. And as we realize, you know, they are set upon by the herd of centaurs.
Yeah. And if, you know, we remember from chapters before, the centaurs made it very clear to Hagrid, like, we don't want any people, like, humans in here, foals or whatever, are okay. So kids are okay. So, and again, this is, like, very diabolical on Hermione's part.
Yes, this is very diabolical. And I think it's diabolical on general principle, knowing how hostile the centaurs are right now. But knowing how hostile centaurs are going to specifically mix with this particular woman who is known to have no respect and no regard for any non-human magical beings.
Yeah. Yeah. She's, you know, I mean, you brought up this point in chapters previous, like when Hermione does these things that are ultimately kind of violent in the end, like.
Yeah.
What's going on here? And because you're right. I mean, Dolores is not, she's not going quietly into the night. She's going to, you know, she's better than everybody. She's going to tell these half-breeds, you know, like what the deal is. So.
Yeah. And it's just, I don't know if it's just interesting the fact that Umbridge even being so outnumbered, I guess, you know, balancing, you know, like political power with like brute force power, that yeah, you may have political power, but you can't always trust other people to, you know, that your aggressors or whatever, your opposition, to, you know, have the full mental ability to think that, oh, even if I shouldn't do this because there'll be negative consequences afterwards. Like, in this sort of position, you should not be presuming that, you know, they can, you know, engage with their neocortex in that right. sort of problem solving and decision making. So the fact that she's so delusional in thinking that her status in the ministry has any sway here or any power here.
Right. Yeah. I mean, why does she think that those rules would be the same in the forest. I mean, it's just kind of, that's kind of naive.
And that would be one thing if she was as powerful as Dumbledore and knows she can get herself out of a situation, but right. she obviously can't.
No.
Like her only strength is like the political aspect.
Right, which is not going to serve her in any capacity here. I mean, like, I don't, if she thinks these like centaurs are at what are the filthy half-breeds, beasts, uncontrolled animals, do animals play by like polite society rules? No. So why does she think that's going to work here? Not that she was like elected to go in there, but why is that her move? Very interesting.
Yeah. And it's like, your forest, I would remind you that you live here only because the Ministry of Magic permits you certain areas of land, and then to which one of the centaurs shoots an arrow above her head.
You know, it's not going to end up very great.
So she tries to like perform magic against Magorian, and that just all the centaurs charge, and Harry grabs Hermione and pulls them to the ground. Like, you know, they thought they would get trampled, but again, all the centaurs are just going around, weaving around them. Which is, you know, not to diminish anyone. It's, as someone who understands horses, I understand that, you know, a horse, you know, 99.99% of the time, you know, has no desire to pummel you. Like, it wants to be out of your way, or wants you to get out of its way. Like, it doesn't take any pleasure in squishing you.
Right. Yeah.
And so, anyway. And so we hear Umbridge screaming, and as she's being carried off. And there's something interesting about this, because traditionally in the Greek myths with centaurs in them, there is this sort of motif of centaurs dragging off maidens to rape.
Oh, yikes. Okay.
And so, yeah, just evoking that image of dragging a woman away. Not that I don't think, you know, the centaurs would sully themselves. Themselves in such a way, but
wow, I didn't know that. That's pretty. That's
but
pretty
that has
dark.
That has been brought up in terms of, and then we get again Hermione's screw up. Like, I'm thinking, like, all Hermione would have had to say is, "We didn't want to come here. She forced us to come here. We don't know why she or give any bullshit excuse. Like, she had us at one point. We don't want to be here." Not say, oh, you can help us out.
Yeah, that's a little bit of naivety on Hermione's part as well. Like, the centaurs think they're above them. We've got a lot of competing egos in these situations.
And I think she's blinded by the fact that how people-pleasing and accommodating house elves are, and that's her minority group that she's focused on for so long.
Yeah.
That she's so used to them, like, people, you know, the elves wanting to help even though it's to their own detriment. And so she is not at all used to, even though she got a good taste of what, you know, how the centaurs feel, like, with Hagrid. But she's just, again, I think she's being very naive of thinking that the centaurs are going to take well to this.
It feels like a little bit of human arrogance, too, as, like, somebody, I haven't done or speciesism, you know, I haven't done super deep dives into those things, but I've always kind of thought, you know, as humans, we have this, we're, you know, animals are there to serve us. We're not here to kind of live together, which is kind of what my ideal would be. And I wonder if there's a bit of that in Hermione, even though she's experienced some, you know, kind of, I can't think of the word right now. I'm sorry. My brain is more sleepy than usual, but that she even kind of does that herself. It's just like when, you know, nobody can really say they're not racist because there's an element of racism. You know, we can try to unlearn it the best
there is always implicit bias.
Right. Yeah. So
but even just acknowledging that, like, horrible, oh, run for the hills, critical race theory. Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh, gosh. So scary. So scary. Yeah, so it's just very interesting. Hermione's choices are increasingly more, I don't know. They're just increasingly more curious.
Yeah, you said you don't hurt the innocent. We are not like the traitor Ferenczi. And again, maybe that's another thing. Her only exposure is Ferenczi, who is civil. And but on the other hand, like, you know, they, in history, they talk about goblin wars and stuff. Like, Hermione of any of the three should know the historical context of how the centaurs have been screwed over.
Yeah. Yeah.
If any of the three kids are going to, any of the golden trio is going to know.
Yeah. I don't know what her deal is here.
So before they can be carried off like Umbridge, Grop comes to the rescue serendipitously.
And he's coming out swinging.
He's coming out swinging and he's screaming Hagger.
So we're going to just assume that he's looking for his brother.
Yeah. And he's like, Hermie, roared Grop. Where Hagger?
Oh my gosh. Scary.
I don't know. Grop want Hagger.
Oh my gosh. I love that they make it a point to remind everybody that it's and later on that it's Hagrid's little brother. So that was just kind of funny.
Yes. Who is 16 feet tall. Yep. So in essence, Grop is able to, you know, kind of draw them off because he just starts, you know, rampaging because they're throwing arrows at him. He's getting irritated, just a lot.
Right.
Crazy stuff. And Hermione's like, oh, that was horrible. And he might kill them all. I'm not that fussed, to be honest, said Harry bitterly.
Damn. Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
But we took care of a big problem here, though. I mean, Dolores is out of the picture. What is going on with her? Let's just pretend it's not the thing that Amy said. Let's just pretend that she's just like chilling in, or I mean, I don't think she is dead yet. So I'm just going to say that. But she is no longer in their presence to cause a problem.
Yep. And luckily, they don't even have to trudge all the way back to the castle because the others have escaped the clutches of Malfoy and his goonies and have joined them with their wands.
Yes, thank goodness for that. And then they kind of talk about how they got the got rid of the problems again.
Yeah. So what did you think about Harry being so like, you're not coming?
What did I think about that? I mean, Harry's not really like, sorry, everybody, my favorite person in a lot of these lately, because he's kind of, I don't think he's arrogant and thinks he's like the ultimate badass, but he is just kind of going through a little teenage angst, I think. I can understand why he thinks maybe fewer is better logistically sometimes, but I mean, ultimately everybody wants to help solve this problem. I wondered also if it was just kind of a, you know, Sirius is mine. Like, he is my person. I don't want to share this one. I want to be the one to rescue him. I don't want to have any help. So
that, I never thought about it that way, but that could be something subconscious. Because I definitely feel the same. This is not coming from, like, beforehand, before she with Umbridge and trying to get into her fire, beforehand when they said, oh, we can help, like, that definitely was coming from a place of like protectiveness and, you know, but this is not coming from like place of protection at all. This is coming from, you don't know shit, I do.
Yeah.
Which is not fair because, first of all, Ginny. Right. Ginny's gone through shit with Voldemort. He knows that.
Oh, yeah.
We don't know about Luna, but we know about Neville's past. And even Harry has noticed, like, ever since Bellatrix got out, he is like being such a badass.
Yeah, and you know, we do know that Luna can see the Thestrals, so she has, somebody has died.
She is not, you know, ignorant of certain,
right,
you know, darker realities of the world. So yeah, so this is all, yeah, this is very much coming from like a place of arrogance and like to the point of not even thinking that they can help, but that they would be a liability. He has so little faith in them.
A little unfair, Harry. Like, come on, man.
Yep. And so it's like, how are we going to get there? And it's like, Luna's like, we're going to fly, of course.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, we don't have any broomsticks. And it's like, there are more ways to fly than broomsticks.
Luna in her, all of her weirdness or whatever.
All her weird wisdom.
Yes.
And then who should show up?
The, oh gosh, I'm sorry. The mad horse things. Yes, the spooky horses. I was like, nobody else did. Okay. Yes, the Thestrals.
The Thestrals.
Yeah.
Yeah. And which, so, yeah.
They're covered in blood. And I kind of had to go back and read that again because I was like, anyway.
I'm assuming some splattered of Gorp's blood falling on them.
Okay. That's kind of what I was like. The centaurs were not like ripping them to shreds. Like, you know.
No, I think it was like others' blood in the scuffle.
Okay. That. Anyway, I was like, what did I miss?
You need to stop reading those books like the Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires. We're not there.
We're not there. Yeah, I know. Well, that was a hard book for me to read.
Although that book was at the cutesy city square bookshop in Mississippi, and it's just like I want it to be good, but I know Jess says it's intense and I can't do that gore.
The level of horror was, I didn't expect it. So if you're not into that, and bugs, those are, ugh, anyway. so yeah. Okay. So, well, so, and then the Thestrals are attracted to that smell, mm-hmm. I guess.
And so, and I love how Harry is like, you know, he comes up to them and he pets one and he's like, how could he have ever have considered them ugly? Because it's like my savior.
Yeah. Yes. Of course. Very attractive all of a sudden.
Yeah. And so eventually enough come so that they're able to. So, yeah, they start. And finally, Harry relents, is like, all right, pick one and get on.
Harry. Gosh. Come on, man.
And thus we move into chapter 24, the Department of Mysteries. And so I wonder, would you prefer to ride a Thestral or a Hippogriff?
Oh, man. Well, It's like all of a sudden you made me feel like I might have to answer the world's most serious question.
I know. Like, your look on your face, and I'm like, this isn't like asking about like Aristotle's like metaphysics. Or
right. Well, I would need to leave. I was, you know, I guess given the gothic vibes we met on, I would have to say a Thestral, but I haven't seen one. Like, I don't think one's been illustrated in the little drawings here. Mm-hmm. And I am not watching any movies until, you know, probably till the very end. So I don't have one. I don't have a good, I can see what I think they look like. Anyway, so that's what I was thinking about, but I'm just going to go with the Thestrals. There we go.
Yeah. I don't know.
What about you?
I'm really torn between the two, just because even though they look so badass, they're so bony. They would be so uncomfortable. I want like the fluffy plumage of the hippogriff.
That's a good point. You also have more experience riding horses than I do. I've ridden like two horses in my life. So
yeah, like it's because once you take all the like fat and like muscle away, like they're pretty lean. Like that's like they're So I tend bony to think horses. Of hippogriffs. So they get on and you know, because half of them can't see them.
Right, right.
So they're like riding invisible horses in the air.
I'm glad they kind of walked through like, how do you get on this horse? Because they had to have some assistance. Cause I'm like, you couldn't just like throw your leg over something and hope it worked out. But
yeah, and I love how it shows like Luna was already in place, sitting side saddle and adjusting her robes as though she did this every day.
Good old Luna. She's
which says. I have never gone like side saddle with all my horse riding experience because it's just, again, it was purely, it has no function whatsoever. It was purely for propriety so women didn't have to like spread their legs to be on the horse.
Oh,
and
my
it's
gosh.
Like it, like the injuries, like having your legs crossed like that on a horse, like, and there are still some crazy ass people who just for like tradition's sake still do it. I've seen pictures of women jumping horses in side saddle.
Oh my
it's crazy. It's stupid.
I didn't know the origins of it, but that sounds pretty yeah, I haven't ridden horses a lot.
Yeah, it was, again, purely propriety's sake, because God forbid that a woman spreads her legs to sit on an animal.
That's so bizarre.
It's, you know, it's interesting, all these little things about, it's a testament to how much the patriarchy, like, sexualizes the dumbest things.
Yes, Yes.
Because they have nothing better to do. Like, if anything, like, a lot of those, like, Greek myths of, like, Zeus turning into a swan and, you know, screwing one girl, or turning into the bull, Taurus, and screwing another girl. And it's the, it was the idea that it was more appropriate that even if a woman was being, like, salacious, it was deemed less scandalous for her to be making love to an animal than to an actual man.
Ugh. Oh my god, that's like bizarre.
It's so insane.
It is insane. It's ridiculous, the little things that are just rooted in sexism.
And again, like, with, not to go off on a whole tangent, but you know, obviously as some people know, my specialization is Middle Eastern studies. I've studied in various Arab countries of varying degrees of conservatism and Islam. And to me, there's just a, you know, not just the stereotypical, like, you know, obviously I don't agree with, like, the certain, especially the full face covering that's sometimes applied to women, because it's like that level of, to me, that's its own form of hypersexualization, because you have to cover so much. You're basically constantly reminding people that my body is first and foremost used for sex. Therefore, I cannot possibly do anything else in this world unless I am completely covered head to toe in black.
It is funny how that works, isn't it? It's like you're concealing it, but it makes people think about it. So
make people think about it more. You're just drawing more attention to it.
Yeah. But so then, you know, why don't we just solve the bigger problem and just kind of normalize, you know, nudity and sexual.
Anyway,
but that's
me. I digress. Luna is very cute with her side saddle position, but that has a very sexist history.
Didn't know that. So now I know.
Okay. So yeah, so they go on, and it seems that thestrals are like owls. You just tell them where to go, and they know where to go.
Sweet. I'm sticking with my thestral now, still.
Mm-hmm. And so they're flying through the air, and then, you know, it doesn't really describe how much time has passed. I don't know if these are, like, you know, Anne McCaffrey dragons that can transcend, like, space at a, like, tip greater speed. I don't know. But finally they land, and I didn't think about this, but as they're, like, you know, kind of trying to figure out, like, the, you know, the Doctor Who, like, telephone booth.
Oh, yeah. The TARDIS.
Yeah. The telephone booth. And then Harry sees that the thestrals are, like, scavenging the dumpster like raccoons. And I'm just I just forgot about that. Because, oh, it was so sad. You know, my neighborhood raccoon, you know, came to get her, like, did her dinner. And she had a bald spot and she had, like, a wound on her. It was healing, but I'm just like, oh. Either she got in a fight with another raccoon or animal, or the only other thing I can think of is maybe she accidentally fell out of a tree and scraped herself on a branch.
Aw, poor gal.
It was just very sad to see her like that.
poor raccoon.
Mm-hmm. All right, so they squeeze into the phone booth, and it's just like, who's here? It's like, we're here to rescue someone, and it prints out little badges. Harry Potter rescue mission.
Yes, I thought that was pretty funny, too. That's cute.
So, they go on into the atrium, and it is completely deserted.
Yeah.
Harry has a certain sense of foreboding that, why isn't the guard here?
Yeah, something's going on in this, in the ministry this night. Mm-hmm.
And so they go from the atrium to the elevator, the lift, and they go down, down, down. And of course, the place they have to go to is, you know, at the very, very bottom.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, Department of Mysteries. And so first it begins with, there's this circular room that is lit with blue flames.
Yeah.
With a bunch, with like a dozen doors.
Right. This is
this is very like Legend of Zelda, like fire temple shit.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty wild. I mean, it's pretty, I don't know, pretty mysterious, if you will.
Yep. And then the minute they close the door from whence they came, not the floor, but the wall, like, spins around.
Which reminds me of those stupid rides at, like, the you know, parking lot carnival or whatever, where you kind of like get along the wall and spin around. So yeah, yeah, that's what it made me think of.
No, that's a more accurate, like, I just naturally think of my one of my favorite Disneyland rides of, you know, the Mad Tea Party with the teacups.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that one's cute. Oh,
yeah, it's cute. In fact, I remember once seeing a video of, you know, Cardi B, you know, at Disneyland with her daughter, and they're in a teacup, you know, spinning, having fun, and then her bodyguard is in a nearby teacup, you know, watching them, and he's just totally deadpanned. And it's just this deadpan, like, resting bitch face on this huge black guy on a pink swirling teacup.
I'll have to find that. That's pretty funny. Oh man.
Anyway, so Harry remembers in his dream that he always went to the door exactly opposite.
Right, which, you know, now we don't even know what door.
We don't even know if it's the same door now.
Right.
So it's like, I'll know by the, like, interior. Like, let's just pick a door.
Right.
So they go pick a door, and there's this huge tank with green water, and there's not fish in it. What's in there, Jess?
There's brains, which is so bizarre, because Luna's like, oh, it's this something else. And it's like, no, they're brains, I think Hermione says. And they're just like, brains? What are we doing with them? And then they leave. So we don't really know why there are these floating brains in a tank yet. But we just know it's bizarre. And I kind of thought it was like, you know, if I don't know yet what the relevance or importance of this is, but it could just be something like, you know, let's just make this weird for weird's sake, so people don't go any further. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. So they go back to the main circular room with the blue blue sconces.
Blue flames.
Yeah, sconce. And of course, Hermione, being the smart one, before they close the door, she like draws a red X on the door so that it's labeled.
Smart. Very smart.
And so then they go into another room, which has this super old, crumbling, ancient archway.
Yeah.
What'd you think of this one?
And it's just, like,
it just seems to be portrayed as something, I guess this is my first time really considering how old this structure is, because it just makes me think of like Stonehenge. It's just like, who made this? And for what purpose? And where did they take it from? Like, where was this? Was this sitting at Stonehenge? Or, like, where was this that got brought back? Because, again, this is the British Ministry of Magic. I do not trust that this was on UK soil. They could have easily colonized and, you know, gotten it from somewhere else in the world.
Absolutely. They absolutely lifted it from somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And Harry keeps hearing like voices and whispers.
Right.
And so does Luna.
Yeah.
Even though there's no, you know, it's just one archway with a like old, you know, curtain in the middle.
Right. Because this isn't the veil area yet. Right. Mm-hmm. Or are we in that room? I don't know. Their rooms were confusing to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then they finally go back, and then they find a room with a whole bunch of, which he saw clocks gleaming from every service, large and small, grandfather and carriage hanging in spaces between bookcases, and there's like this jar where a hummingbird goes from like a full hummingbird to an egg. And I don't think I'm spoiling really anything that obviously with all the clocks, this is the room devoted to the research of time magic.
Okay. Yeah. And I kind of wondered about the hummingbird, you know, because I think, is it Ron gets really entranced by it, or is Ron or Ginny?
I think it's Ginny.
Okay. And so I was kind of wondering what that was, because she's kind of like hypnotic to watch this hummingbird, you know, kind of go through the cycle of life constantly.
Yeah. And then finally they get to the area where he saw Sirius in his vision, which was this huge room with towering shelves, like, you know, as far as the eye can see, and they all have, you know, these orbs.
Yeah. Very strange. But they can continue going on through this room. They don't, like, you know, they don't just turn around, obviously.
Yeah, no. So this is because Harry recognizes this room. And so he goes all the way to row 97, which is a very popular Harry Potter trivia question of what is the number of the row for when they, you know, go to rescue Sirius.
That's funny. All right. Noted.
Yep. And so Harry gets there and there's no one there.
Right. But there is something there.
Yeah. What is that something?
Something like a little orb, or I don't remember what exactly. Or an, oh, like I'm sorry. Little, it's a box, right?
Like
or
there's all these, like, you know, crystal balls.
Okay. Yeah.
And there's one Ron notes, you know, Ron being the observant one for once, that has Harry's name.
Right. And it also has the Dark Lord's name.
Yeah, it says SPT to APWBD, Dark Lord and ? Harry Potter.
Okay. So.
What?
I figured out part of these abbreviation or whatever. Or this. What? I know it's Dumbledore, but I cannot figure out who SPT is. So I thought about it. And I was like, well, that has a million names, a million initials. Let's see. Yeah, it's obviously Dumbledore because he has some long name.
Oh, so you remembered it because it's Albus Percival Wulfric Brian Dumbledore.
Yeah, I was like, okay, so that's Dumbledore. It's SPT? No idea. And I did kind of like rack my brain for
you
that.
You sat on it for a while. So someone to Dumbledore, Dark Lord and ? Harry Potter.
Right.
And Hermione's like, Harry, I don't think you should touch it. And Neville's like, no. Honestly, it made me think of like the old Disney Sleeping Beauty where they're like, don't touch the spinning wheel.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's funny.
It's like when you tell someone don't touch it, you know, they're going to touch it.
Right. It's just like telling somebody not to think about a naked woman under, you know, a robe. They're going to think about it.
Yeah. And Harry naively is like, it's got my name on it. I can touch it.
Oh my God, Harry, chill.
And then as he, you know, gets the glass ball down from its shelf, there's a drawling voice that says, very good, Potter. Now turn around nice and slowly and give that to me.
And then there's the end of the chapter.
Yep.
Awesome. Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Harry, for ending that so well. Yeah. All right. SPT. I did. I sat there and I was like, Sirius, no. And I was like, Thomas Riddle, no. So I don't know who it is yet. Oh, okay. I'm sure we'll find out.
Eventually.
Yes.
So are you ready for Gothic Geek Out?
Yes.
And what did you pick?
The Department of Mysteries. I mean,
of course. How can you not? You know, we've already, you know, saturated the Forbidden Forest, which was a big part of this, a good chunk, half of this, you know, episode, group of chapters. But yeah, the Department of Mysteries, which for obvious reasons, it has mystery in the name, which is one of our five main criteria for Gothic novels.
Right. Yeah. And then it's just kind of like it's got elements of, you know, Gothic horror, Gothic, you know, romance, even kind of, I would think, symbolized by the, you know, the veil kind of blowing around in the one room.
Yeah, because if one thing you've got, you know, you've just got general ambience with, again, just the, like, the carousel of doors? I don't know what you call it. You know? Like with the blue flames and like the black sconces and all. And all of that. So that's super gothic. And then horror with the brains.
Yeah, exactly. The brains.
With the brains. And then past, because who knows how old that freaking, you know, that freaking archway is.
Right.
Or in terms of, you know, past with regards to the time room.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yep. And yeah, it very basically speaks for itself.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to... It was like, okay, well, then this is the obvious gothic thing this week. So well, there we go. I don't know.
Alrighty then. So Then we can move on to Tarot of the Day. And the card I picked at random was the Page of Swords.
Okay.
We did the Queen of Swords, I think, a little while back. But so what does it have to say? The Page of Swords is full of energy, passion, and enthusiasm. When this card shows up in a tarot reading, you are bursting with new ideas and plans for the future. You may be excited about starting a new project, pursuing a new approach, or learning something new. You have so much energy that you feel as though you could do almost anything, and you can. The challenge, however, is whether you can keep it up. As with all pages, the beginning always looks promising, but you need something else to follow through and keep up the pace. Page of Swords often merges when you are exploring a new way of thinking, a new idea, a new perspective, new knowledge, or a new technique. So,
I guess the only thing that I could think hone in on there was like the keeping up the pace of kind of their determination to find Sirius. You know,
my first go-to was, I think, very much Luna is exemplifying all of those Page of Sword qualities. Because again, with Luna's characters, there's always this debate. Not that it's like a front or anything or a facade, but I'm just like, is she truly like so genuinely like blasé about everything? Because again, she is very observant. And, you know, obviously they're in a situation where the stakes seem to be very high. So that calm, is that like, you know, is she like literally panicking on the inside or not?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Is it just a show? I don't know. Luna's a hard person to read, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, again, Page of Swords, that you're exploring a different way of expressing yourself with others and communicating your ideas. Again, very much Luna, new ways of thinking. You have a curious mind and a thirst for knowledge. As you explore this fresh way of thinking, you're asking a lot of questions and gathering as much information as possible. You're also very much in the exploratory phase and not mastery. Well, that is in regards to their foray into the Department of Mystery, because they're going into all these crazy rooms and they don't know what the heck they're about.
Yeah, I guess there's not like a book that Hermione could have read about like everything to know about the Department of Mysteries. So
yeah, no, my understanding is that, you know, obviously given the name Department of Mysteries, that this is this type of like deep like research that like NASA does and does not, you know, tell anyone.
That
well, I think, yeah, they've already made contact with the aliens.
Okay. Oh yeah. What did I yeah, that's there's a lot of things about chakras and things like that in these papers that came out. I don't know. I see a lot of TikToks about this release of documents that came out. I'll have to ask. I work with some people that work at like NASA. I'll ask them if they've seen some aliens. They're probably like, please just do your job.
I don't know. I don't know if it's true or not, but there was something online that said like NASA hired like 24 theologians about like how to like, you know, how would we break the news to humanity that we made contact with aliens.
Oh, wow.
And well, so like, again, I don't even know if that's true or not, but they were just making a comment like that sounds like, you know, the end, the cliffhanger to a, like another season.
Yeah, of, like, it really TV does. TV show called Living on This Planet. It is Living, quite the horror the show right now. Yeah.
Yeah. I love all those memes of dystopian fiction has moved to current affairs.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. Then, as the sword relates to communication, the Page of Swords suggests that you are exploring a different way of expressing yourself. Again, this is exploratory. If you're looking for a sign to move ahead with a new project, the Page of Swords says go for it. I guess in terms of challenging, again, by not just Luna, but I think in exploring different means of expressing yourself and communicating, I think very much Neville is doing this,
yeah,
as well, in terms of, you know, not just I want to go, like I want glory or whatever, but, you know, Neville is really challenging Harry's angsty bitchiness, and it's like, this was what Dumbledore's army was all about, or were we just playing a game?
Right.
Which, yeah, Harry, I mean, doesn't have much to say.
No, he doesn't. And Neville's becoming a bigger or different, very different person than he was when we first met him, too. Mm-hmm. So,
indeed. But any more thoughts with Page of Swords?
I do not, no.
Nothing really with the centaurs makes me think that, because again, they are totally not open-minded to new ways of thinking, because they are just clinging on to their traditions and their, you know, grievances for dear life.
And Grop is, he's kind of he's something else. I don't know what to say about him. So.
Alrighty then. And then we can move on to the Oracle card from my Black Moon Astrology cards. And the card I picked out was the Lunar Eclipse card.
Ooh, timely. Right?
Which I had just landed in Mississippi and got in my hotels on the last full moon. And it was the super moon, total lunar eclipse that was super red and super fancy. But I'm a bad witch, a bad pagan. I was just too exhausted from my flights to go out and look at it. I was taking a hot bath listening to my Smutty Fairy Romance audiobook.
I have heard some astrologers say don't look at it. So I think you're okay.
Yeah, when the lunar eclipse card presents itself in a reading, dramatic changes are in store. Such changes will likely be unexpected ones, the kind that might seem hard or will take some special effort on your part. These will not be gradual, easy, barely noticed. Your world may be rattled somewhat. Well, Harry's world is rattled multiple times.
Yes, very much so, yeah.
Chaotic thing after chaotic thing. He's like, oh, we have to go in the forest. Oh, we have to deal with centaurs. Oh, we have to deal with Grop. Oh, we're going to use Thestrals. Oh, here's this shiny orb. Oh, there's a voice with Omnis.
Right, Omnismit.
Yeah.
Got a lot to figure out.
Yeah, so definitely he can't stick his toes in to, you know, test the waters. Any number of things might happen. Lunar eclipses herald times of new ways of looking at things. Again, same thing as Page of Swords.
Yeah.
That is why they can even bring on changes in eyeglass or contact lens prescriptions. Just kind of ironic since Harry wears glasses.
Yeah.
Which, again, why doesn't Harry use contact? Is there any wizarding form of contact lenses?
I would think so. There's got to be a wizard optometrist or a little spell. You're like, oh.
Yeah. I don't know, just Harry Potter film trivia. Obviously, you know, a lot of people complained that, they didn't use green eye contacts for Daniel Radcliffe, you know, but unfortunately, he specifically had an allergic reaction to the green eye contact lenses. And so that's why they had to settle for blue.
Oh, that's really interesting. Huh. Something with the pigmentation in there that bothered him?
Yeah, something about the green just didn't work.
That's wild. All right.
Mm-hmm. It's just crazy what these things, Tom Felton, who plays Draco Malfoy, he's admitted the constant bleaching of his hair for the character of the platinum blonde Draco Malfoy. He said it's ruined his hair.
Oh, wow. Yeah, even after that, I would... That's... The suffering that the people make, I guess, for their art.
Yeah. Even it makes me think of Maisie Williams, who played Arya Stark. There was a period where, again, she was obviously developing and wanted to be more girly and embrace her girliness, but just her character absolutely did not.
Right.
Was the antithesis of that.
I wonder if this is the same for Miley Brown or whatever, the girl from Stranger Things. She was kind of.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. That too. So expect to be thrown off balance. If the situation is something you have taken for granted and it collapses, then you will need to make a new start. In any event, you should start to see these efforts within the next 6 weeks and expect for an outcome to be completed within 6 months. So yeah, it collapses. Yeah, just lots of chaos, lots of new things. Most shocking, again, because I just think of, the centaurs dragging off Umbridge.
Yeah, I was going to say the new things that I just thought about was kind of Harry's allowing more people to be part of their kind of debauchery or rescue missions.
Shenanigans.
That was kind of a big deal for Harry, because usually it's the three of them, the Golden Trio, or, Harry and one or the other. It's now we're adding these new kind of
characters. Adding new components. And for, you know, in the fandom, you know, there's the Golden Trio, Ron, Harry, and Hermione, but there's also what's considered the Silver Trio, which is Neville, Luna, and Ginny.
Oh, cool. I now know that. I didn't know that.
Alrighty then. And then, man, it is such a short episode.
I know.
Again, they didn't feel that short because so much happens, but.
Right, right.
Alrighty. And then now we have fan fiction time.
My fan fiction, like, what if the centaurs weren't an option for Hermione? So let's just say she's still headed into the dark forest or the forbidden forest.
Well, that kind of goes into my fan fiction because, again, that's, okay. You know, because, yeah, again, Hermione was taking a big risk. I guess she was trusting the fact that, you know, the centaurs would be, like, on high alert, if you will.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what she was banking on. But yeah, because Harry first thinks, like, she's going to take her to Grop, which, again, Grop also could have been just as, you know, destructive and, you know, effective in getting Umbridge out of their, you know, out of their way. Even if they can't control Grop, they know that, you know, Umbridge trying to, like, stun Grop or, like, subdue him would not be an option.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, with Grop, you kind of have a higher possibility of him, like, pummeling Umbridge, I would think. But with the centaurs, I don't know. It's kind of like what we've talked about earlier in the book, that questioning kind of Hermione's intent and, you know, how dark she's really willing to go.
Yeah, how dark she's go and how premeditated is, like, okay, mm-hmm. Hopefully this worked out. Again, I tend to think more that she's more diabolical and she's like, she knows damn well that Umbridge is going to piss off the centaurs because of her prejudices.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no way she's going to be able to, civilly communicate with the centaurs.
Interesting.
So, yeah. My fan fiction was, whether by intent or ignorance, because she wasn't there in the second book, what if they had shown up? What if they had gone to the giant spiders? What if we had seen Aragog again?
I would have not been excited about that. So I would have been like, please, God, get us away from this.
Because if you do, you could, like, you know, again, there's the whole question of whether, you know, because Aragog has already shown that he's not willing to be merciful with the kids the way the centaurs sometimes are. But Hermione and Harry could be like, see, this lady made Hagrid go away.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And be like, you know, Hagrid is gone because of her, and just let the spiders do whatever.
That would have been terrible. I mean, all these people are not cool people, but I don't like I like spider. I dislike spiders that much. Like, there we go.
I guess it's a question of, do we interpret, you know, again, not that we, you know, necessarily want people to die, but also, again, considering the stakes that at this point, you know, all they know is that Sirius is in mortal peril. So if it's a choice between Sirius dying and someone else dying, it's going to be the other person.
Yeah, exactly. They're obviously, I mean, Sirius is, there's no way Harry's going to give up Sirius.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, I try to think of another fan fiction regards specifically to Department of Mysteries. Like, well, I guess, before we got into, like, you know, the room with the orbs and, like, the archway room, there was one room that they tried to open that they could not open. Obviously, they couldn't with Alohomora, but nor with even Sirius's knife. Harry takes the knife.
Right.
And tries to, you know, which worked unlocking Umbridge's office. So it's not like some piece of crap from the pawn shop. Like, it's, you know, it is a legitimate tool to go beyond Alohomora in breaking stuff, but this is so, like, so protected that it just completely destroys the knife. So, like, what do you think would be behind that door if Harry were to go into it?
Man. I was going to say the, like, most secrets, which is kind of a dumb response. But, like, do you think there's some prisoner of Azkaban, some prisoner in the wizarding world, like some worse than Voldemort, that there could be, you know, like not locked away in there, but maybe like maybe a route to that.
Honestly, I was thinking, yes, someone being locked away in there, but maybe like, you know, some sort of like historical figure that would typically be dead. Like, I don't know, is Rasputin in there? Is Judas in there? Is maybe. Judas in there, tall, tied up?
That's kind of, first of all, pretty dark that you and I both went down that path, but that's just, whatever. We read a lot of gothic stuff.
Jane Eyre.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh, I just read another Jane Eyre type book. It was called The Book of Cold Cases, except it was a sister. So it was kind of, anyway, that's mm-hmm. such a common trope, which I was kind of like, disappointed. It's like, let's anyway. So that's probably naturally why we went that route. Somebody's locked away. That is kind of a cool thing to think about. Like, who is worse than Voldemort, or who is like, yeah, I don't know.
Because I'm just trying to think of like really despicable. Maybe Dracula's a wizard and Dracula's in there.
Cool. Maybe. What is the Lovecraft thing? The Cthulhu?
Quetzalcoatl is the feathered serpent. That's the actual god. I forget. I have not read any of H.P. Lovecraft, which I should have. And my sister loves him.
Really? Mm-hmm. I just saw that Lovecraft Country, and it's one of those authors I should read, but I'm just kind of like, eh.
I love the, you know, there's those really cute t-shirts, you know, the play on words. And there's one of like the little monster, but like a cutesy virgin. And he's like knitting or something. He's like, and it says, I love crafting.
Aw, that's cute and very nerdy. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. So I'm, Rasputin, who are Dracula, Judas, who are other diabolical people in
Genghis
history.
Khan, I don't
Genghis
know.
Genghis Khan, who are diabolical people that were actually wizards and they're still alive.
Nostradamus. I don't know. He's not a wizard.
Nostradamus. And then that one Hungarian countess that would kill her mates and bathe in their blood to stay youthful.
The Countess of Bath, Elizabeth Bathory.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I was a little obsessed with her for a while, so it's pretty fucked up. But yes, I think her name's Elizabeth Bathory.
Yeah, yeah, or at least whatever the Hungarian version of Elizabeth is.
Yeah.
That's all I'm thinking. But yeah, I'm we both went to the idea that, you know, for all the crazy stuff that's in there, that if something is really in there, there has to be like a person in there.
Yeah, I feel like that would be the most appropriate. Like, you can't get in here. I mean, how does one get in here? Like, maybe only Dumbledore, or, you know, somebody has the, and maybe that's what the ball opens. I know you know what that happens with it, but I don't, so I can guess. Here we go. Yeah.
Alrighty then, and thus concludes this episode of Rambling Raven Puffs. Tune in next time, and we shall go over chapters 35 and 36, Beyond the Veil and The Only One He Ever Feared. Yes, what will happen?
I don't know.
Yeah. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Rambling Raven Puffs. Our theme music was composed by John Williams, recreated by Kinez Norwar. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophie Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophie Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophie Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophieMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophie Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophieMareStudios, all lowercase. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophie Mare Studios podcast.